Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, and we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and another week has come and gone, and we're here to review it all and tell you what's going to happen next week. I know you've all tuned in to find out two main things. Number one, Shirley McBurney's going to be able to tell us what happened to that airplane. And second, how should I feel about the Crimea? Well, I don't have a whole lot of insight on either one of those. I don't know what happened to that airplane. It is truly mystifying. And scary. That's about all I can say about it. It's mystifying and scary. But you'd think there would have been some luggage floating around if it had crashed. Anyway, thinking maybe it didn't crash. But I don't know. Who knows what happened? We certainly will find out before too long, though. Something's going to have to give on that. And as far as the Crimea, well, I don't know. I really don't care that much about the Crimea. There's too much going on here for me to involve myself wasting valuable brain energy analyzing Russia and Ukraine and Crimea. But you can go to other shows and get speculation on all those topics. While here we'll stick strictly to the facts. And we'll start in Greeley, Colorado. There's a barber shop up in Greeley, and the owner, his name is Hugo Corral. He owns Hugo's Barber Shop, as you can well imagine. Well, he's introduced a new policy at his barber shop. He says that if you come into his shop smelling like marijuana, you will be asked to leave. He said his customers were complaining. Many of his customers would come in with their children, and they were expressing their frustration about all the little gangsters smelling like pot. And this is from CBS in Denver, says that he put up a sign that says, if you smell like dope, you know, go away. And he says that he's actually a supporter of the nascent marijuana industry, but he doesn't want his customers, he doesn't want the kids being bothered.
Yeah, so put up the sign.
So he puts up a sign that talks about marijuana. So if you have a kid who doesn't know what marijuana is and you walk by Hugo's, they're going to ask, what does it mean to smell like marijuana? Are there any kids who don't know what marijuana is in Colorado?
My kids.
Just ours? You have to sequester your children. Yeah. You have to sequester your children and try to keep the world from corrupting them for as long as you possibly can. And that's our goal here at the McBurney compound. Hence, we have a compound. Now, is there anything more? According to an attorney there in Colorado, well, here in Colorado, Hugo does have the right to refuse service to someone who's been smoking dope, as long as it's not a constitutional issue involving a person's race, religion, or gender. And that's just poorly written by the reporter there at CBS, because it almost implies that smoking pot could be construed with one's race, religion, or gender, but that's not what he means. Anyway, it's just a matter of time before pot smokers are lumped in with oppressed black people and women and minority religions as a civil rights group, you know. Just a matter of time, because they will qualify as disabled to a certain point, right? They're disabled. Well, I mean, they're stoned, so their lawyers could argue, well, they're a disabled minority, and they should not be discriminated against. That'll be coming next in Colorado, right after we legalize homosexual marriage, which is rapidly approaching here in Colorado, but I don't want to get distracted. We'll move on to the politics file, and this is more politics of dope here in Colorado, because you can't escape the public's insatiable appetite for news about dope and dope smokers and tax revenue from the dope smokers. Now, if you watch the local news here in Colorado, you would think that the sale of marijuana is going to save the state financially, and it's probably the greatest boon to the state of Colorado since oil or gold or silver was discovered here in the state. Just the greatest thing ever if you watch the news here They just love to report on it and just say how wonderful everything is. But if you're like me, and you remember how this was sold to people, you start digging through the news to find the truth, and I found some truth. At Breitbart, their big government page reports that back in February, John Hickenlooper's budget office, that's our governor. Yes, his name is Hickenlooper, and he's our governor. And that's the one thing I won't make fun of the guy about, is his name, Hickenlooper. You don't have to make fun about it. You just have to say it and just let it hang out there for the rest of the country to absorb. Yep, the governor of the state's name is Hickenlooper, and he's all for legalizing dope and queers and everything else. Well, back in February, his budget office estimated that marijuana sales would approach $1 billion. And the budget office suggested that the state would take in $134 million in tax and fee revenues. Well, now, in January of 2014, now that the dope's actually being sold and smoked and eaten and everything else, well, it turns out Colorado only brought in $2 million in tax revenue from the sales of dope, far short of the prognosis from Hickenlooper and his drug-addled cronies up there at the Capitol. Now, you'd never know that here in Colorado if you watch the local news or read the local papers. They just say how wonderful it is and how the money is just pouring in. Anyway, so they brought in $3.5 million if you count in the medical marijuana. So the state's first $40 million in pot revenue, according to the way the law was written out here, is supposed to go towards schools. Yes, construction of new schools, ironically, he said. But at this rate, the entire sum of that revenue won't even hit the mark. They won't even bring in $40 million. They said they'd be bringing in $100 million, $130-some-odd million. Anyway, so the news reports in Colorado are just glowing about this blossoming new industry. And the sheeple here are led to believe that it's just booming business and they all feel fine. They don't remember the budget predictions or anything about that because they're all stoned and they can't remember. And I have evidence that many people in authority here in the state of Colorado, they must be stoned. I got this story from Fox News, Dateline Denver. The judge overseeing the Colorado theater shootings case says jurors will have up to three separate deliberations on whether or not defendant James Holmes should be executed if he is convicted of the murder. Did you get that? It's going to give them three chances during the trial to sit down and ponder the idea of whether or not this animal should be put down. If he's convicted. And his trial is scheduled to start in October, which will be like 2.5 years after he slaughtered all those people in the theater, and they caught him outside, and he said, "You got me," and they scraped the blood off of at least a dozen victims off him, and they went to his apartment and found all the booby traps, just like he said they would. But he's presumed innocent, and his trial may start in October. It may not. They have to do another psychological evaluation. Because, well, I don't know why. Maybe the doctors who evaluated the first time, it turned out that they were all stoned. And so now they've got to figure out if this guy's crazy, although I don't know how that has a bearing on how soon he should be executed. Should have nothing to do with it. But what do they call it in court when you enter in evidence? I can't remember. Anyway, that's Exhibit A, that the governing officials in Colorado have been to the pot shops. All right. So now we'll go to, I wasn't sure where to file this. I didn't know if this was part of the domestic tranquility file or if it was reason number 737 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. So this story achieved dual file status. It's from Collin County, Texas, from CBS down there. Garland, Texas police received a call around 9:30 last Saturday night regarding a suspicious vehicle. When they arrived, two officers proceeded into a wooded area and saw two teenage males running. The officers returned to the suspected vehicle and waited, thinking that these teens would probably return to the car, and sure enough, they did. When the two teenagers approached the car, the police officers asked them what they were doing. And one of the teens replied, "We're burying a body." He said, "We're burying a body," to the police officer. And that's when they began to search the area, and they discovered the body of a 17-year-old, Ivan Mejia, of Wylie, Texas. All three, the victim and the two teenagers who were disposing of his body, all three attended Wylie East High School of the Wylie Independent School District and are from the town of Wylie, Texas. Police say the murder of Ivan Mejia took place behind the high school there in Wylie. And that's all there is to the story. Two students murder another student. They're burying his body. Sad state of domestic tranquility and yet another reason to keep or get. We don't know why yet. We don't know why. To find out if they were, maybe the two teenagers were depressed and they had been prescribed some antidepressants. That's a possibility. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But that's just another day in high school in America. Yeah. Every week there's at least one of these stories of students butchering each other. And that's just the worst of it. That's the worst end of the spectrum is when they actually slaughter one another. But the psychological and spiritual damage inflicted on children in the government schools every day is enough so that anyone with half a brain should realize that if at all possible, and even if it means making a major sacrifice in your life, you should get your children out of the government schools before they're injured any further. That's my advice for the week. It's the same advice every week. I've been saying this to people for 15 years. The definition of insanity, they say, is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. Now, generally, that's true unless what you're doing is speaking the truth in love and declaring righteousness and the wisdom of the living God. If you keep doing that over and over and over, generally, you're going to get the same result. People are going to sneer at you, laugh at you, call you crazy, call you a fundy, and they're going to go on about killing themselves and their families and hurting themselves and other people. But we keep doing it, and we're not insane. We're just convinced that truth is truth and righteousness is what it is, and God is who he said he was, and that he does have remedies for the problems in your life and the problems of society. So we'll keep banging our head against that wall. Until Judgment Day. We'll keep doing that. From right here at the Weekly Worldview. All right, now, on to the Justice File. Now, these two teenagers there in Texas, I think they've been charged. Well, their names haven't been arrested because they're juveniles. But they will be charged with murder. They'll probably end up on trial. They very well may end up being convicted of murder. But to what end? Well, let's take an example from the Justice File. Now, this is not Texas. This is Chicago. Again, this is from My Fox, New York. Dateline, Chicago. James Degorski. Do you remember James Degorski? I remember him. Because back in 1993, he and an accomplice shot and stabbed two restaurant owners and five workers at Brown's Chicken and Pasta during what Fox calls a botched robbery. A botched robbery. The robbery was going along swimmingly until they killed those seven people, I guess. I don't understand people with journalism degrees and how they write. But do you remember this? The bodies of the victims were found in the walk-in cooler and in the freezer at this restaurant in Chicago. I remember this. Even though it's about 21 years ago, I remember when this happened. Because it was quite the big story. It was shocking. Well, Degorski is now 41 years old, and he's in jail. And he accused a Cook County jail guard of punching him and breaking his cheekbone and eye socket back in 2002 after Degorski was arrested. Degorski was arrested for what had been one of the most notorious unsolved murder cases in Illinois history, the case I just talked about, where these seven bodies were found in this restaurant. So the cop who arrested him subdued him. Why? He's a mad dog killer who butchered seven people. Well, Degorski filed a lawsuit, and it's been winding its way through the Illinois courts for nearly 20 years as Degorski sits. Is he even on death row? I didn't even dig that far into the story because it really doesn't matter if he's on death row. Death row doesn't mean much anymore. Well, the jury has decided. And this murderer, convicted, by the way, of slaughtering these restaurant workers in Chicago, he's been awarded nearly $500,000 in a civil lawsuit. His attorney, Jennifer, has hailed the jury's decision as a great victory. She says, "I think it's a beautiful day for civil rights when a jury can put aside emotions and say we're all entitled to our civil rights. It's about protecting the constitutional rights of the least among us." The least among us? This filthy lawyer quotes Jesus Christ in defending an award to a convicted murderer. It's unbelievable. I don't think James Degorski was who Jesus was talking about when he talked about what you do and don't do for the least of these. But only a lawyer could do that and then sleep at night. You must have to have your soul excised at some point in law school. Just unbelievable. Now, U.S. District Judge Robert Dow, who presided over the civil trial, he ruled that jurors could not be told any of the details of the restaurant killing. So the jurors were kept in the dark that this was the notorious murderer of those restaurant workers. They were completely kept in the dark. Well, not completely. The jury was allowed to know that Degorski was convicted of murder. And they still awarded him nearly $500,000 for taking a shot from a fine, upstanding law enforcement officer who should get a medal. Instead, the punitive damages, in this case, over $250,000, have to be paid by the cop who broke the guy's face. Unbelievable. So that's the state of justice. I've told you about the state of domestic tranquility. We've talked about the state of the government schools. And we're just getting started here on the Weekly Worldview, because when I come back, we'll talk about love Hollywood style. Welcome back. All right, Chris, move along. That reminds me, I was chatting it up with a doctor this past week who had attended University of California, San Diego, UCSD, and we're chatting, and I told him the story of how me and my buddies at the UCSD Fieldhouse in the summer of 1990 helped Chris Cornell and Soundgarden drag their sound gear into the field house where they were opening for satanic band, Danzig. And it was funny because the doctor had heard of Soundgarden, but he wasn't familiar with Danzig. And I said, "Well, that, you know, Soundgarden was nobody at the time because they were opening for Danzig." And they drove their own van up to the field house and asked if we could help lug these monitors in. And anyway, we sat around, had a cigarette, talked with Soundgarden, and anyway, I think they all turned out to be a bunch of filthy heathens. Just disgust. It's so sad. Such a talented fellow. Anyway, but there's still hope for him. He's alive. So, anyway, that was my brush with rock and roll greatness at the UCSD Fieldhouse. Yeah. Had no idea who those guys were. And they had no idea what I would become. So, anyway. Let's go Hollywood style. Love Hollywood style. Police have announced the arrest of Gabriel Campos Martinez on suspicion of killing Hervé Coronado Medellin, both from Los Angeles. Yes, Medellin had been dating, Gabriel had been dating Hervé. There were two boys they were dating, Hollywood style. Do you remember this story when they found the severed head behind the Hollywood sign? This was, was a few years ago, 2011. I remember this story because people were worried that maybe it was a serial killer, maybe it was terrorists. They found the severed head, and then they looked around and they found hands, feet, part of a torso. Well, it turns out it was a lover's quarrel between Gabriel and Hervé. Hervé didn't treat Gabriel very nice, and Gabriel dismembered him. About 120 police officers, you'll remember, took part in a two-day search of the 7 acres of the park up there by the Hollywood sign after Medellin's head had been discovered. And a cadaver dog helped find his hands and feet right there in the area where the head was severed. So, turns out it was, love, Hollywood style. This is when men fall for men. And anyway, that's just disgusting. Why did I even... I'm sorry I even did that story. I feel like I need a shower just reading that story. All right, let's get on to something that's less disgusting but easily just as disturbing is this interview from Adam Lanza's father. You remember Adam Lanza was he was the young man who killed his mother and then gunned down 20 children and 6 educators at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown. We all remember that story. That's what Fox News reports, and they've reported, I've decided. So Adam Lanza's father has been relatively silent. Well, he gave his first interview about the massacre, and he says he often contemplates what he could have done differently in his relationship with his son. Can you imagine the pain and torture of a father when your son does something like this? I mean, I can't even. Anyway, Peter and Nancy. Peter is Adam Lanza's father. And his mother, Nancy, separated in 2001, and then they divorced in 2009. He last saw Adam in 2010. His mother told him that his son didn't want to see him anymore. And he made several plans to meet with him over the next year or so, but they always fell through. He even considered hiring a private investigator to find out what his son was up to so he could arrange a way to just meet him, but that never worked out either. Well, Adam was 13 when psychiatrists diagnosed him with Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism, generally not associated with violence. But he says he thinks his son was schizophrenic. He says as a young child, listen how he describes his son. He describes his son, he says, as a young child, he was, quote, just a normal little weird kid, unquote. How do you describe, well, maybe now that this has happened, maybe all of his memories of his son are tainted and ruined. But a normal little weird kid, just weird, odd way to describe. He says he used to spend hours with his father playing Legos. That was before the separation and the divorce, obviously. Playing Legos with your dad, who's still married to your mom? Yeah, that's an odd situation. No, it's actually quite normal. But what happened? Well, one of the things, so the kid's diagnosed with mental disorders. He was put on antidepressant drugs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Who knows if his mother was on drugs, his father was on drugs? I don't know, but they were divorced. Lanza says his concerns about his son Adam increased when he began middle school. He describes the social awkwardness, the uncomfortable anxiety, unable to sleep, stress, unable to concentrate, having a hard time learning, the awkward walk, reduced eye contact. You could see the changes occurring. Unquote. He says about his son's foray into middle school. Man, you'd think if your kid was worrying you that much. You know, I want to say one thing about Adam Lanza. He looked like the kind of kid that everyone would make fun of. Okay? He does. I went to government school. I know what it was like. Yeah. It was vicious animals in those schools. And they were absolutely merciless with certain children. It was awful. And just me as a dad, if I'm that worried about my son, that all these things, all these changes to his personality. Anyway, you would think that dad would have and mom would have decided maybe we shouldn't send him to this place every day where he's being tortured and made fun of and all of that. Maybe they could have. Maybe that's one of the things that dad could contemplate that he could have done differently was not send his kid into the jungle every day at the government school. Maybe him and his mom could have stuck it out, not gotten divorced and ruined the kid's life. Anyway, so he says he saw all this terrible stuff happening, but didn't know what to do about it, I guess. He says, quote, I know Adam would have killed me in a heartbeat if he'd had the chance. I don't question that for a minute. He's probably right about that. Peter Lanza said he searched the psychiatric literature on mass killers to try to understand what happened. Well, Peter, I would suggest that there's other literature you should search to try to figure out what happened. And the psychiatric literature on mass killers is probably not going to help you in the long run. There's other literature that I would suggest, and start with Genesis and just work your way right on through. Maybe you could figure it out. Finally, the father says of his son, he says, I wish Adam had never been born. He says, I know that's not a natural thing, but that's totally where I am. God, there's no question, he says. God, there's no questions. He uses the name of God as a, I don't know, filler or maybe as a profanity. I don't know. Anyway, so just the horror of saying that about your child. I wish my child had never been born. Wow. It's just awful. That's the domestic tranquility file. Today, that's the state of domestic tranquility in America, where all sense of morality, right, wrong, discipline, training has been cast aside in favor of institutionalized education and medication for the kiddos. That's what we get. And it's just sad, really sad. All right, now, let's move away from social commentary. Do I want to do this on the government before I get into the science file? I feel like this must be noted, so I'm just going to go to this really quickly. This is from Investor's Business Daily. This year, this is from the politics file. We're going to talk about the government. This year, 70% of all the money the federal government spends will be in the form of direct payments to individuals. That means the government writing checks for specific dollar amounts to specific people. 70% of the money. Investors reports that, in effect, the government has become primarily a massive money transfer machine, taking $2.6 trillion from some people and then handing it out to other people. And then they go through a number of percentages and years and GDP and Medicare, Medicaid, and you name it. They go through all the specifics of it. And they say a surprisingly large amount of federal money is handed out to wealthy people through Social Security, Medicare, farm subsidies, unemployment benefits, conservation programs, disaster payments, other programs. Yeah, the 1% receive about $10 billion each year in government welfare. And then the rest of it is all given out to the poor in the name of helping the poor. And I guess I just wanted to just everybody make a mental note that now 70% of the money that the government spends is welfare money. And people want an answer to what do we do to right this fiscal disaster that is about to occur. And the answer is so glaringly obvious, is that the people have allowed the government to become their god, to the point where the government's actually sustaining people's lives and their houses and their cars and their food. Unbelievable. That's what has to change. And it's a core moral issue that has to change. There has to be a change of heart amongst the people. They have to decide, instead of worshiping the government and relying on the government to take care of them, they need to rely on God. And God, in turn, will help them learn how to rely on themselves. Because God and yourself will rarely fail you. But at this rate, it's just a matter of time before the federal government does. There was one thing we would never know, but that's money. Money changes everything. I said money, money changes everything. We think we know what we're doing, that don't mean a thing. It's all in the past now, money changes everything. They shake your hand and they smile and they buy you a dress. They say we'll be your friends, we'll stick with you till the end. Oh, but everybody's on this, looking out for themselves. And you say, well, who can you trust? I'll say it's just nobody else. It's money.
All right, we've got to come back. We've got to come back. I could listen to that.
Let's move from money to science. We go to the science, really, file. Yeah. Writing in the journal Nature last week, scientists said they had found an elusive mineral pointing to the existence of a vast reservoir deep in the Earth's mantle. Yeah, this reservoir may hold as much water as all the planet's oceans combined. How's that? Pretty cool. They say the evidence from this mineral was found in, they believe it came from what they call a transition zone, sandwiched between the upper and lower layers of the Earth's mantle. An analysis shows that a whopping 1.5% of the rock may be comprised by molecules of water. And that's a lot, 1.5% of a really, really lot of rock there. So that's just amazing. This sample that was examined by scientists, they say, really provides extremely strong confirmation that there are local wet spots deep in the earth in this area, according to a lead researcher involved. And he points out that Australian geologist Ted Ringwood years ago theorized that a special mineral was bound to be created in the transition zone down in the Earth's mantle because of the ultra-high pressures and temperatures down there. And the predicted mineral was named Ringwoodite after geologist Ted Ringwood. Well, it appears they found it. They found Ringwoodite. And this confirms suspicions amongst many geologists that there are vast quantities of water trapped deep beneath the earth. According to this article from Yahoo News in the United Kingdom, they say scientists have debated for decades about whether the transition zone has water, and the implications of this particular discovery are profound, according to one scientist. If water exists in huge volumes beneath the earth's crust, it is bound to have a big impact on the mechanics of volcanoes and the movement of tectonic plates, by which he means earthquakes. This is all just very fascinating scientific stuff because it borders on a proof of yet another prediction of Dr. Walt Brown, who wrote the book In the Beginning, who is the author of the hydroplate theory, that indeed there are vast quantities of water under the earth, that water was involved in Noah's flood, and is currently involved in geologic activities right to this very day. So just cool stuff.
the fountains of the great deep. You remember that from Genesis, the fountains of the great deep? Now, that was now, as far as we know, Moses, who wrote that, did not have a geology degree, as far as we know, at least not a recognized geology degree. He obviously had access to some geological knowledge, though. Pretty cool stuff. Can't wait to see that this, I can't wait to see how this research evolves to further prove the existence of not only the living God, as he is portrayed in his book, the Bible, but also the truth of the creation story and the global flood. All right. Yeah, all modern current movies aside, I've heard about this movie, this Russell Crowe movie. Yeah, like the drunken maniac Noah who's concerned about overpopulation. Anyway, haven't paid too much attention to it. Won't go watch it. Don't care. I find this much more fascinating because this is real. This is real stuff confirming, once again, that the Bible is true, that God is alive, and you're not him. How about that? All right. Now we move to the science. Really? File. And this is, I told you earlier that I would get back to selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, all these antidepressant drugs. Got an article here from WorldNet Daily. One in every 50 American children now has some form of autism. That's according to the CDC, if you can believe what they say. They probably grossly exaggerate that. But there does seem to be an awful lot more autism out there. No doubt about that. And they say that the number of people now taking antidepressants like Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, Luvox, and Celexa, that's 11% of Americans are now taking. 11% of all Americans over the age of 12 are now taking these antidepressant drugs, and an astonishing 23%, almost one in four women in their 40s and 50s, are taking antidepressants. That begs the question immediately for me, why are all these middle-aged women so depressed? What's going on there? Could it be that the feminist dream turned out to be kind of depressing once you hit middle age? Could it? I'm just going to throw that out there, all right? Well, WorldNet Daily reports that multiple studies conducted over several years now lead research scientists to conclude that women taking modern antidepressants, commonly called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRI drugs, while pregnant, run an increased risk of giving birth to a child with autism spectrum disorder, one of these diseases ranging everywhere from Asperger's to autism to ADHD to all these disorders along what they call the autism spectrum. Well, 2.5 years ago, a peer-reviewed study out of California-based Kaiser Permanente documented significantly increased prevalence of children born with autism in pregnant mothers taking antidepressants. But that's only one study. So that wasn't taken all that seriously. The next and larger study was conducted in Sweden and released in April of 2013. Researchers concluded, quote, "We found that mothers of children with autism were over threefold more likely to have reported using antidepressants during their first prenatal interview, pre-birth interview, than mothers of children without autism." Three times more likely, if the kid had autism, it was three times more likely that the mother had taken these antidepressants. Now, that's two studies. Now, another study of possible linkage has been conducted in Denmark, was released just this past November, and the Danish researchers discovered that, quote, children exposed to any kind of antidepressant during pregnancy had a 50% higher risk for autism spectrum disorder compared with those who were not exposed to antidepressant drugs while they were in utero. And they report that all this has to do with the brain's main neurotransmitter, which is serotonin. Basically, the biological mechanism of SSRI drugs consists of chemically interfering with the mother's serotonin levels, which in turn, researchers warn, has been proven to affect the in utero offspring's brain development. Yes. So, Now, this is three studies, and then there's a fourth study, an animal study, that's also referenced here. So while I'm not willing to say that SSRIs are directly linked, it certainly appears that there's enough evidence that it should be of concern. And the main concern for me is, why do people need all these drugs? Why are they so depressed? The World Net Daily goes on to quote a professor of developmental pediatrics, and he says, quote, poor maternal mental health during pregnancy is a major public health issue. Non-treatment, he said, is not an option. Some children might be at risk from SSRI exposure, but we don't know who, we don't know how, and there are many mothers and children who will benefit from SSRIs. They say untreated depression during pregnancy carries its own risks. Risks to the children really have to be balanced with the risks to the untreated mom. So why are all these pregnant women so depressed, for crying out loud? Could it be that because families have become so fractured and broken, and that so many women are not in happy, loving marriages, when they find themselves pregnant, they end up getting depressed and freaked out? I remember every time we found out we were pregnant, we were hysterical with joy, every time. And my extremely attractive audio engineer, despite that there was some morning sickness, there was some, no doubt, there were some mood swings, but overall, she was joyful. Right up to the point when delivery started. And then she said, you know, give me that epidural, okay? But other than that, it was pure joy. And even during delivery, she was pretty happy.
Well, that was the happiest.
Those epidurals are really cool. Anyway, we don't endorse, nor do we recommend against epidurals. You do whatever you want, whatever. But anyway, I was struck as I'm reading this entire article. Number one, why are there so many depressed people? And number two, why is depression such a major problem during pregnancy? I just don't get it. Well, maybe I do get it. It's because there are not a lot of strong, loving, well-grounded relationships. And women find themselves pregnant, and instead of being one of the most joyful moments of their life, it becomes one of the most stressful. And that's just a sign of a broken, collapsing, rotting edifice of a culture that we find ourselves in, is what that says to me, okay? That's all. Oh, and that's, you ask, why is this in the science? Really? File. Is because, is it really science for medical professionals to determine that they need to find a pill to make you happy? Is that scientific at all? If you're unhappy or you're depressed, are we supposed to think, well, maybe we can tweak the chemicals inside your brain housing group and maybe that'll help? That just doesn't seem scientific to me. It seems it's like alchemy to me. Not where I would go. I would try to get to the source of, why are you so depressed? Let's talk about that. Instead of trying to get you high, which seems to be the goal of much of the modern medical and pharmaceutical industry, is, well, if you could get high, you won't be depressed. I know, I'm just a layman. So that's the way I look at it. Anyway. Now, we go again to the science. Really? File. Dateline San Francisco, California. An independent commission has released a new report. And they say the Department of Defense regulations designed to keep transgendered people from joining the military are based on outdated beliefs that require thousands of current service members to forego critical medical procedures and other changes that could align their bodies with their gender identities. Unquote. I think that was one of the authors. I don't know why I slipped into the lisp. I couldn't help it. Anyway, this independent commission, by the way, that says there's no compelling medical reason to keep trannies out of the military, this independent commission was chaired by Dr. Jocelyn Elders. Do you remember Jocelyn Elders? I can't even go into what she said we should teach our kids to do. She's disgusting. She was on the independent commission, and another was Rear Admiral Alan Steinman, emphasis on the rear, because he's a
He's an open flaming homosexual. He's an open flamer who came out as a raging, screaming homosexual a few years ago. And him and Jocelyn Elders, they were on the board of this independent commission that says we should allow and encourage transgendered people. Jocelyn Elders and the committee said, "We determined not only that there's no compelling medical reason for the ban, but also that the ban itself is an expensive, damaging, and unfair barrier to health care access for the approximately 15,000 transgendered personnel who serve currently in the military." Are you kidding me? There's 15,000 trannies in the military right now? Am I supposed to believe that? I don't believe that. I reject that prima facie. I doubt it. Let me just put it that way. Anyway, this panel was convened, as you can well imagine, by a think tank at San Francisco State University.
I'm up now. Let's go!
Boys, one of Scandinavia's loudest bands. In for the final bumper there. Very good. One of the loudest bumpers in all radio, as a matter of fact. Wow. We go from trannies in the military to Disney and the homosexuals. Disney's worldview, according to Disney, does not currently align with the worldview of the Boy Scouts of America. That's according to a letter from a council board president there at Boy Scouts of America, and they are encouraging their employees not to volunteer for Boy Scouts anymore because Disney's worldview does not currently align with the Boy Scouts of America. At this time, they say they've decided they are not going to encourage their employees to volunteer to help the Boy Scouts, and they're not able to reverse their decision at this time. Although by saying we're not able to reverse our decision, they leave the door open that they might reverse their decision, which proves that this onslaught of homosexualization of the entire world is stoppable. We can win if we will simply stop allowing the homosexuals to roll over every corner of our society. Making me sick. Well, now you wonder, why is Disney upset with the Boy Scouts? Didn't the Boy Scouts just say homos are great? The Boy Scouts actually split now. Anyway, according to Breitbart, recently the ban on homosexuals was removed by the Boy Scouts, but the restriction on homos is still enforced for Boy Scout members who are over 18. If you're over 18 and you're a homo, you have to leave the Scouts, and the homos are not, they're not happy about that. See, the Boy Scouts thought if they let the homos in and let everybody just be fairies and everything would be wonderful and glitter dust. And the homosexuals would embrace the Boy Scouts. Well, I shouldn't put it that way. Anyway, they thought they would be loved and adored by the homosexuals. But what turns out, no, the homos not only want to have the little boys encouraged to be homos, but they want the scout leaders to be allowed to be homos. And the homosexuals will not stop until the Boy Scouts allow scout leaders. In fact, the Boy Scouts will have to install openly flaming, raging homosexual scout leaders before the homos will be satisfied. And so now Disney, which is piled high with homos, A spokeswoman there says the company does not provide grants to institutions that operate or support activities that are counter to the policies of the Disney company, she said. She says the BSA fails to measure up to Disney's standards of non-discriminatory practices in regard to sexual orientation. The founder of, this is reason number 37, by the way, to get your boy out of Boy Scouts, or maybe reason number 37 to join Trail Life, John Stemberger, the founder of Trail Life, which is the group that started once the Boy Scouts let the queers in. He says he's not surprised. He says Disney World has a long history of supporting homosexual causes, including allowing gay days right there at Disney World in front of God and everybody, if you can believe that. Yeah. He says they've actually become an open advocate for homosexuality. And homosexual leaders, he says, will never be satisfied with the new Boy Scout policy of allowing little boys to be homos, but not allowing Scout leaders to be queer as well, because that's what they want. The homosexuals will never be satisfied, and you could just end it right there. They will never be satisfied, because their whole life is their whole lifestyle is based on the fact of never being able to be satisfied, because you have to keep sinking lower and lower and lower into immorality and disgusting behavior. And let's just stop talking about that. All right. I've got a candidate here from South Carolina. He's running for lieutenant governor. His name is E. Ray Moore. And he says he'd like to improve education. Well, everyone running for governor or lieutenant governor or Congress or senator, everybody, they always say that, right? Well, listen to how he says he would like to improve education. He says he wants to improve it by taking kids out of public schools and putting them in Christian schools and homeschooling. Well, that's he got those out of order, but we'll go. He says homeschools is better. He says he served more than 15 years with Exodus Mandate, which is part of Frontline Ministries, and the group's aim is to encourage and assist Christian families to leave the public school systems for what he calls the promised land of homeschooling. Well, he includes Christian schools. I'm not so big on Christian schools myself. I'm not for institutionalizing your kid in any way. I'm for taking... Anyway, but this is a step in the right direction, I guess. Well, see, I got all excited about this guy, and now I'm not that excited. He says, families providing Christian or homeschooling for their children can be a key to revival in America. I agree with that. Let's see. This is E. Ray Moore. He's running for lieutenant governor of South Carolina. In the past, he served as a consultant for Dan Quayle in his first Senate race. And Pat Robertson's presidential bid. Okay. Now I'm losing even more enthusiasm. I should have just left it at that. Anyway, he was awarded a Bronze Star for service in the first Gulf War. Hoorah. There we go. Get me back on board. Anyway, so he says he's running for, or he doesn't say he's running. He's running for the governor, lieutenant governor of South Carolina. And I'm a bit torn. I'd hate to see a decent man leave what appears to be honest work and ministry to become an executive in the governmental whorehouse there in South Carolina. So I'm not sure I can support his candidacy, but I do appreciate the fact that a politician has come out openly and said, get your kids out of the public schools. That's encouraging. That's all. All right. I don't want to do that, do I? All right, I guess I'm going to have to do this. From the personhood file, the Democrat-led West Virginia State Senate has passed another pain-capable unborn child protection act. Legislation had been previously passed the House. It now sits on the desk of Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, a Democrat who states he is pro-life. This is according to Breitbart's big government page. So here we have a Democrat legislature. Both houses pass. It's basically one of these 20-week abortion bans, alleged bans. And so now we have the Democrats can all say they're pro-life because they've signed on to this pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act. And pro-life groups, Breitbart reports, are praising the legislation and calling for Joe Manchin, another Democrat who claims to be pro-life, to sponsor similar federal legislation. That's right. Pro-lifers want the pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act to go federal, and they want Joe Manchin, Democrat, who says he's pro-life, to champion the bill. And that will be the pro-life industry's victory for this coming election cycle. Alan Witt, president of the Family Policy Council of West Virginia, says, quote, "We believe we are witnessing a bona fide miracle with the passage of the first abortion-limiting bill in our state." Unquote. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. A CNN poll released last week, according to Breitbart, found that more than half of Americans believe abortions should be restricted. So this is the rub, ladies and gentlemen. People say, hey, pro-life is polling higher. The youth, they're pro-life now. They're more pro-life. They're 50% pro-life. Let's all get excited. It's so great. Here's what's happening. To many, especially young people, if you're not for killing every baby, you can call yourself pro-life. Hey, I'm only for killing babies that are under 20 weeks, which, by the way, is like 85% of abortions. Almost all abortions are done under 20 weeks. But I'm only for killing those, so I'm pro-life. When they answer the poll, yes, of course I'm pro-life. Well, that's not pro-life. Just because you're not for killing everyone doesn't mean you're pro-life. Pro-life means you're not for killing anyone who's innocent. So the meaning of the term has been diluted and corrupted by the pro-life industry itself in an effort to raise money and achieve political victories like this. It's a miracle! And in doing this, the pro-life industry continues, in addition to raising money and padding their quite comfortable retirements, leadership of the pro-life industry continues to give cover to baby killers like the Democrats right here in West Virginia, like Joe Manchin. They're baby killers. But the pro-life industry gives them cover because they can vote for these bills. And they clean up the image of the abortion industry. The baby killing business doesn't look so ugly when you limit. So when the baby actually has a face and fingers and toes, well, wait a minute. They still would allow the killing of babies with faces and fingers and toes, but not after 20 weeks. So doesn't that seem reasonable and civilized? Almost pro-life. It's a miracle. So they clean up the baby business. And then the souls of the people who the pro-life industry is misleading, what about that? What about these children in high school and college who think they're pro-life because they're for not killing a few babies? Well, those souls be damned as far as the pro-life industry is concerned, because their goal is not about changing people's hearts and people's minds and trying to direct people's souls in the direction of the living God. That's not their goal. Their goal is to win political victories, raise money, and well, they came to do good, and they've done very, very well indeed. Disgusting. Makes me sick. All right. A little bit of international news here. The Times of Israel reports that Israel's demand to be recognized as a Jewish state by the Palestinian Authority may be a secondary issue in the eyes of the Obama administration. Yeah. The State Department spokeswoman Jan Psaki, she said, in answer to a question on the issue, listen to what she said when she was asked, "Must the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state?" Here's what she said. "If you look at the issue of a Jewish state and whether Israel will be called a Jewish state, that's been our position, as you know, for a long time. But that doesn't reflect what the parties will agree to, which I know you know, and of course there are many issues like that that are being discussed as part of the framework. So to us, it is not a surprise that at this pivotal point in the discussions, as we're getting down to the latter end of the 9-month time frame, there would be heated rhetoric and language by both sides about what they are and aren't willing to make compromises about. Does that answer your question?" No. No, Jan. Jan doesn't answer the question. In fact, you sound like a lawyer. President Mahmoud Abbas is meeting with President Barack Obama on March 17th as part of an effort to world peace and all that. Yeah, right. Speaking with youth activists of his Fatah party recently, Abbas said in a speech there was, quote, no way he would recognize Israel as a Jewish state. He says, there is no way we will accept it. We will not accept it. There is no way we will accept it. We will not accept it. He answered the question straight up. At least you know where Mahmoud is coming from. But as far as the U.S. State Department, I have no idea what that woman said. Well, I have some idea. Basically, you know, the Jews will get to choose between the Mediterranean and the scimitar. Anyway, another from Israel Today, as one of the conditions for getting the Palestinians to negotiate in this latest round of talks with the Barry and Kerry show, Israel agreed to 4 prisoner releases, the fourth of which is scheduled to take place at the end of this month, March 2014. Well, Chief Palestinian Negotiator Saeb Erekat said that he had urged Mahmoud to pull out of the peace talks. But Erekat has revealed that Abbas is determined to maintain the ruse of genuinely negotiating with the Israelis until the fourth prisoner release occurs and they get all their terrorists back. The Israelis are being played for fools. While I'm sure they're providing fine quality health care with abortion services and transgendered surgeries in their military, but in the meantime, they're being rolled by the Palestinians. Benjamin Netanyahu told reporters that negotiations will require at least another year to reach an agreement, and he's already said that Israel would never again forcibly uproot Jewish civilians, meaning that if a Palestinian state is established, tens of thousands of Jews would have to be allowed to live there. Well, the Palestinians, they say no. And so this is all a ruse to get these terrorists out of prison. That's what this is all about. And did we ever think anything differently? If we did, then we were stupid. We were foolish in thinking that the Palestinians have ever negotiated in good faith and that their ultimate goal is not the utter destruction of every Jewish child in the Middle East. That's what the goal of Hamas is. That's what the goal of the Palestinian Authority is. That's the goal of Saeb Erekat. That's the goal of Mahmoud Abbas. That's all this is about, is rolling the Jews into a position where they can be struck and killed. That's what it's all about. All right. Now, finally, from Passaic County, New Jersey, a New Jersey court decision, a judge there has sided with a pregnant woman that her ex-fiancé had no legal right to be in the delivery room at the time that she bore a child. The man, according to the judge, was really just trying to interfere with the woman's ability to exercise her own choices about giving birth. So the decision holds that the father not only does not have a right to be in the delivery room with his fiancé, ex-fiancé. Oh, I have to do a Jersey accent. Ex-fiancé. It was her ex-fiancé. He wants to be in the delivery room with me. I don't want to see him again. Not only does he not have the right to be in the delivery room, he doesn't even have a right to know when the baby was born, or even if the baby was born. We have a quote here from a hack from the pro-life industry, Fathers and Children's Equality, pro-family industry hack. He says, it's a sad day for fathers and for men's rights. He worries, this pro-family industry hack worries that some fathers will be nothing more than visitors and paychecks to their own children. He says, two parents should be two equal parents. And then we have a feminist here, says, obviously she's delivering the baby, but the father is also a part of the baby's life, so I feel he should be there too. Oh no, she's not a feminist. She says the father should be there too. So, anyway, I read this whole article, and nowhere in the article does anybody say, hey, you two, did you ever think about getting married? How about that? Nobody says it throughout the whole article. It's an ex-fiancé. I don't want to see him again. Tell him to get out of here. Anyway, nobody says let's get married. Nobody even points out the fact that nobody's married and maybe they should think about getting married because the whole world has gone insane. And that's it. That's it for the whole show. By golly, it's over with. I and my extremely attractive audio engineer are going to leave the studios. I want to thank KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, and American Right to Life, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.